Fitness Today presents. Welcome to the Listen by Heart podcast, where we feature stories from women of the South China Sea. I'm Jasmine Low, and today I will be joined by Amanda Nell Yu, a Malaysian film director and screenwriter known for her recent body horror film Tiger Stripes. The film won the Critics Week Grand Prize, Semaine de la Critique Cannes, when it was shown at the 2023 Cannes Film Festival in France in May 2023, and it was then selected as the Malaysian entry for the Best International Feature Film at the 96th Academy Awards. Amanda runs Ghost Girl Pictures with a co-founder. She is known for an earlier film about two teenagers and a female vampire who solely attacks men, an urban legend tale in Malaysia and Indonesia. The film is titled Lagi Senang Jaga Sekandang Lembu, or in English, It's Easier to Raise Cattle. That film was featured at the Clermont-Ferrand International Short Film Festival in 2018. Enjoy and subscribe to the Listen by Heart podcast on your favorite platform, be it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Player FM, and so on. Or you can visit our website, listenbyheart.webprojects, spelt webprojects.com. Hi, Amanda. How are you?
Hi, fine, thank you.
Thanks for joining us today.
Happy to join.
There's not really been a Malaysian filmmaker that's done this route that you have. And so it's really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 10 years since a Malaysian film has been in Cannes. And it's the first Malaysian film to have ever won like anything in Cannes, let alone like one of the top prizes. So it's been really, really crazy, like very unexpected kind of beginning, but like amazing. Yeah, I was not expecting my 2023 to be that wild. But, you know, after the premiere in Cannes and everything, you know, a lot of traveling, a lot of meeting different audiences, going all over the world and screening the film and sharing it with a lot of people, which has been...
Malaysia, where you were born in 1985, I believe. Tell us about your growing up times.
I grew up in KL, in the city. So, you know, in the 80s and 90s. And I had two older sisters, one younger brother. So I was kind of a middle child. And I guess, I mean, in the family dynamics, I think I'd like to claim that I was my dad's favorite. As much as like the rest of my siblings really hate that. But like, I guess I was like kind of maybe treated or at least like decided that I was like the princess of the family. I think it was maybe some attention seeking thing, but like that was just what I claimed, that I was like the ultimate princess and everyone had to like just like fawn to me. Not that my siblings ever did, but it was in my head that that was me. Yeah.
Did you have a family nickname?
I did. This was like allocated by my mother, so it's in Cantonese, but it's like it's apparently based on some moon goddess, because I have a very like round face, so she, like whenever she got angry with me, she would call me this like moon character, and so I tell my friends that in the UK, like, oh, my mom calls me moon face, they're like, that's a bit harsh. I'm like, oh, you don't know, like Asian parents are like that. That's just how they are. So it's like, yeah, that was my nickname when I was a kid. And I mean, luckily,
was it like an Enid Blyton reference or not? Because I love the character Moonface.
It's like a Cantonese character, which I've never heard of.
How do you say it?
Oh, Mei Yut. So Mei Yut is the moon for sure, but I don't know where it comes from.
And what's Ngo?
I don't know. Idea. That's the thing. Like, I think it was some character who lives in the moon, like some female character who lives in the world.
I'll make sure to bring this up if I ever interview a Cantonese-speaking person.
Yeah, you can.
No, may you.
Nah. I want to know the truth behind it. I don't trust what my family is calling me sometimes. Maybe they're like trolling me or something. Yeah.
Okay, so daddy's favorite girl, little princess. And then, so Would you like to share a little bit about Daddy's history, his paternal history?
Yeah, I mean,
right, how many generations?
Paternal history is quite well known in Southeast Asia. So we are from a very, very big family, the Yu family. And my goodness, I think my great-great-grandfather was the one who moved, you know, who left China and settled in Malaya at the time. And so, yeah, many, I don't know how many generations is that. So that's great-great-grandfathers.
Great-great, that means early 1800s, 1820s?
Yes, yes, definitely 1800s, yeah, for sure.
1820s, I think.
Fifth generation.
Yep.
So I'm like super Malaysian. For a long time, but yeah. So that's really like my dad's kind of side of the family. Very, very Confucian thinking. My great great grandfather was like a feng shui master, so he really taught a lot of very Confucian and sometimes extremely patriarchal values in families. So I would grow up, you know, as a young girl, always questioning why some of the elders would treat me as second rate to my brother and things like that.
So, oh, so the surname is EU, but in Chinese, how do you say it?
Oh, Cantonese is Yu.
Yu, as in YU in Cantonese, what we normally see, is it? Or Yi?
Maybe. I mean,
or YII?
You the pronunciation is just you, so like, but yeah, we write it as EU, yeah.
Okay, as in the not the Tiger Balm people, right?
No, Yu Yuan Sang,
the health foods people.
Yeah, the TCM people.
TCM. Wow, that is actually, I think your logo is like some kind of root.
Yeah, it's a root with our family name, like kind of.
That's a pretty cool logo.
Yeah, it's actually quite cool, yes.
As I'm speaking, I'm visualizing the store that I know, which is in Penang. It's at the corner. It's very... So is your family from Penang or not from Penang? There's no Penang roots there?
No, we are very much, you know, like around Ipoh area and then Singapore and then also been in Hong Kong.
Okay, so that means it's Teochew?
Cantonese.
Cantonese. Very interesting. Actually, I had a conversation with somebody else about food, right? And when people say Chinese food, you're gonna go into the levels. Like, what?
So many. Like, you cannot just say Chinese food. What type of Chinese food? You know, so many, like, different regions and different flavors and different styles. So, yeah.
And I think the Cantonese really had the science of food making, right? Because they are the ones with the wok hei, you know, with the big, huge wok and the hot, flaming fire, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the Cantonese is probably what most people, when they say Chinese food, is what they're thinking of. Because, like even from the early 80s and 90s, you know, when you go to Chinese restaurant, it's basically Cantonese food. Like, Chinese restaurant in Western countries, it would be Cantonese food, yeah.
Well, but believe now, it or not, yes, now it's changed. Like in Australia, for example.
There's mala, there's Sichuan, there's
Sichuan,
and all that stuff. So yeah, it's great. Yeah.
There's so many kinds coming out now that you're tasting so many different flavors and it's like, is this still Chinese food?
Yeah.
So, okay, that's really interesting. So that means you came from if we were in the old days, you're from like the chemists, the concoctionists.
I guess chemists, I mean, probably a lot more, to be honest. Like, you know, I'm not shy about what my family was, but my great grandfather had his hand in many things, like tin mines. I think tin mines was the one that really, where he struck gold or struck tin. But he had a lot of businesses involved. Yeah,
entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for sharing that. But you were in Malaysia until the age of what, 11?
11, yes.
Yeah. And then what happened after that?
So then I got sent to boarding school in the UK and basically stayed there for like, how many years? Like 17, eight, like 16, 17 years? Yeah.
You know, that's my dream. I mean, I think it's every girl who read the books.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mallory Towers and all that, right?
Yes.
Hey, our dream. So did you get up to all that nonsense?
Well, the thing is, like, in the books, it sounds so fun. And then the reality is, like, actually not that nice. Like, I think, no, of course, like, you know, when I was there, like, 11, 12, it was very sweet. And, you know, you got to, you know, navigate this kind of girl world, which is very much in the film Tiger Stripes. I think, like, I get it. I've seen it. I've experienced it, like, firsthand, how girl world is 24/7. But it's also very fun to, you know, be able to, like, you know, like, share rooms with your best friends every day. It's like a constant sleepover. But I think around when I was, like, in my teens, like, let's say, like, 14, 15, that was when the teen angst came, and I absolutely detested it. Like, I hated it so much. I wanted to, like, leave. I wanted to, like, escape. So yeah, I mean, it's...
But in a way...
are fun, but the reality is, like, it's mixed. It's not a... It's a harsh environment, to be honest, actually. Sometimes I have to, like, you know, say that it's not for everyone. I had a lot of fun. I made, like, amazing friends that are still, you know, some of my closest friends today. But but it's, you know, it's difficult. Like,
this was in London?
This was in Buckinghamshire, so it's slightly outside, maybe about, like, 45, 1 hour train ride away from London, yeah.
But I suppose at that age, you didn't have to deal with parents, right? Like,
yeah, that was the amazing thing. Like, I loved it. I was a really bad kid, so yeah. And I definitely kind of used it to my advantage that my parents were not in the same country. Let's say.
Wait, you say you're a really bad kid, but what's your definition of bad?
Oh, like bad, like did a lot of things that were illegal and underage. Let's say.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, the naughty, the bad kid, at least in my family, definitely the rebellious one, and would always fight back and, like, kind of want to do the things that I wanted to do, and everyone was gonna stop me. Yeah.
I mean, if you look back, 14-year-old self, what did you think 14-year-old self would have thought about 30-something-year-old self now?
Whoa, I never thought of that. I don't know. I hope she thinks she's cool. Yeah.
I mean, what did you want to do when you were 14? Because I remember in school, people asked me what I wanted to do, and as a joke, but people took it seriously. I said, I want to be a housewife.
Right. Yeah. That's great. No, I mean, like, it's such a weird thing to ask a 14-year-old kid, right? They don't know anything. They don't know, like, the hell life is. But I think, no, when I was 14, 15, around there, because I went to a very academic school, so it was always like academia was like the thing you had to do. But at the same time, I had so much love for music and art, and that was really where I spent, like, all my free time and my weekends, you know, in the art studio and in the music studio, like, just playing and you know, creating. But at the end of the day, you couldn't say to your teachers, oh, I want to work in the arts. They'll be like, oh, don't do that. And so I would always tell people that I wanted to be a vet. At that time, I thought I was expected to be doing medicine and to be a doctor. That was something that the parents have always been telling me that I should be doing, and that was what I was born to do. And so I didn't want to be a doctor, and I thought the next closest thing would to be an animal doctor, because I really, really love animals. And I was like, well, I'll do that. And then I remember, like, my mother, like, was so upset, because she was like, oh my god, that's, like, the worst kind of doctor you can be. And then, like, and then as I grew up, then it just became even more shocking when I was like, I'm gonna go to art school. And that was like, oh my god, can you go back to being a vet? I'm like, no.
I see what you mean by bad girl, because you basically were adamant to have things, like, you had that thought process.
Yeah, I was adamant to, like, do what I wanted to do, and no one would stop me, like, at all. Yeah.
So at that age, like 14, 15, 16, what inspired you? What was on TV, for example? What did you watch on TV?
Well, I was very much into music. So it was a lot of, like, grunge music. It was a lot of Riot Girl. It was a lot of, like, female bands that I was really into. I was definitely, like, the goth kid, the rock kid at school, the girl who wore fishnets and like black eyeliner.
So. I was going to say.
Yeah.
Okay. Just like that little doll, you know, those bobbing head dolls?
I don't know.
With the black eyeliners?
Probably, yeah.
You know, like, those, what do they call them? Those bobbing head dolls that you put on your car and then their head just goes.
Yeah. The ones that move in your car.
And then
yeah.
It's like the Muerta, what's that, Death Day in Mexico celebrate?
Mexico Day of the Dead, yeah. Yeah, I loved all those kind of things. I love like goth, grunge, rock, punk. Like that was really my thing when I was a teenager and still is actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, go-to song. What's your go-to song?
When I was younger?
Mm.
That was a while ago, but I loved bands like Hole and Babes in Toyland, which were, you know, these kind
okay.
of 90s.
Actually, I have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hole is pretty good.
Yeah, Hole, L7, Babes in Toyland, all the 90s kind of grunge female bands were, like, I guess, very inspiring to me. It was like women who didn't care and they would like be gross and sweaty and like not be like
not shave
you know all the expectations that society puts you on, those were women that kind of broke these expectations and were badass and loud and messy, and I love that. Yeah,
and that time would be around the year 2000 and
my goodness,
2000-ish, right?
It's around 2000.
Yeah. When we were so worried that 1999 to 2000, we were all going to just switch off.
Yes, the world was going to end. That was hilarious. That was amazing.
That was really funny.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you did 1999 for the New Year's Eve to 2000?
Yeah, I was with my family in back in KL. Yeah, like celebrating with them. Of course, like very moody and with all my black eyeliner and gold.
Goodness, did they even allow you out?
Yeah, I mean, like, I was a goth kid since I was like 12 years old, so yeah.
So then you went and studied in a very prestigious design art school.
Yes, yeah, I went to Central St. Martin's to do graphic design, yeah.
Lovely. What do you remember out of that experience?
It was fun. I mean, it was like the first time when, you know, I got to kind of really focus on art and creating, and that was like all we had to do was that, like every day.
But and no mid journey to do posters, yeah.
No, at that time, no. I'm still very bad and require. It's okay. Like I don't know if I learned any kind of graphic design skills per se. Like I'm still terrible at Photoshop and Illustrator. But that's beside the point. I think it was just to be in a space where it was about creativity, and that was very exciting to me to kind of talk to people who are, you know, learning that and were excited about that. But at the same time, you know, I was again not the most, let's say, even studious student. I was in a band, you know, I was in the music industry, I was in the scene, so I was focused on playing gigs and making music videos and being in that kind of scene as well. And so when I was in St. Martin's, I fell really like in love. I fell deeply in love with like making short films and music videos for the bands, and also like learning how animation works, and ended up being like, oh, like I actually don't do any print media at all. Like I really love like kind of the moving image kind of side. So that was, yeah, my experience there, yeah.
Gosh, at that time, what would you have used to create videos? Because, I mean, technology moves so fast, right?
Yeah.
That would be, what, like 2005-ish, I suppose?
Yeah, so we used DVCam, a lot of DVCam, learning how to do that. But also, I got to work with a 16mm film. So we're using an old Bolex camera, learning how to, you know, put the film in and everything, and shooting on 16mm was really, really fun. I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the foundation of you as a filmmaker.
Yeah. I think that was really, it was funny because like I said, I made a lot of music videos for my bands, that I was in. And I remember when, I was going into, I think it was my first year of film school, And I had to leave my band because I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't like spend so much time being a musician. I wanted to focus, like I actually had focus finally. I wanted to focus on, you know, my film work. And like my band members, when I was telling them, you know, I'm going to do this, they were like, yeah, we've never seen you so alive when you were making our videos. Like when you had a camera with you, like you just became like a completely different person. So that was like bittersweet. It was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry and so sad I'm leaving. But like, it's amazing that you guys could see that. Yeah.
That's really nice. That's really nice. You know, that's a really nice story to share. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
And so after that, did you go out to work for somebody or you went back
after
to school?
Before
film school.
So after St. Martin's, of course, I couldn't drop out as an Asian kid. It was like, no, I have to like, just scrape through. And like, I think I had like, yeah, some medium-ish pass. But I'm surprised because like, I just didn't know graphic design. So somehow they kind of graded me on my kind of film work, which was great. And then after that, I spent 1 year being a musician and touring. Like
really,
you know, in the US and also yeah, having like part-time jobs like working, you know, in a shop. And
so that was musician was really like on your radar. I'm gonna be a musician. And what was your music your band name?
I don't know, it wasn't that on my radar. I just fell into it because like I said, I was really into like the scene when I was a teenager. And so when as soon as I finished school and I went to let's say, art school, you know, I was asked to play in bands because I can play the drums. So I had many bands, like, you know, you always change and everything. But I think that the last band I was in was this Japanese kind of band based in UK called Screaming Tea Party. So that was the last one. Yeah. But I had loads of other bands before that, for sure. Yeah.
I love to listen to Screaming Tea Party.
Yeah, yeah, it's on Spotify. It's really fun. Like
Screaming Tea Party. Okay, I'll look up for it. Oh, it's so fun. We are journeying with you from the age of 11 to like what? Like you're now 20 something. This is a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of like kind of really great experiences, I think. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm sweating here because it's 33 degrees today.
Oh my God, of course, yeah.
Banyak panas. And I didn't turn my fan on because I don't want to interfere. So,
yeah.
But anyway. Okay, so after that then, you went and did a master's.
Yeah, then I enrolled to do a master's in film because I think it was pretty much like, I think this is what I love to do. I think like I found it. Even though I've always been into cinema since I was like a teenager, like since I was, you know, 15-year-old girl, like I was exploring cinema like so much all through my life. But I think it was then, I can't remember how old I was, like maybe 24 or something, like
yeah,
or 25, where I was like, I think I should go to, I want to go to film school and really like figure it out. Yeah, there.
I think that age you would be going back to Malaysia for Chinese New Year and everybody's like, oh, so when are you getting married? Blah, blah, blah. That kind of thing, right? Did you get that drone?
I mean, not so much, actually. I think my family, at least in my perspective, has always seen me as like a very different person to everyone else. It was like, oh, Amanda, yeah, she's different. Like, she does her own shit. Like, there's no way you can, like, tell her to, like, I guess, like, be like everyone else or, like, do the things that is expected of her.
But it's cool that they gave you the room. They gave you the room.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just a constant kind of back and forth and fight and argument and discussions and just always showing who I am, I guess, like to my family was a thing. Yeah.
Did you ever try to conform? Just curious.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's
yeah, it's
so
fun.
Healthy.
Now
actually,
you see my film, so it's like it,
yeah.
That's what it's like, the themes of my film.
I love it. I mean, the fact that you had so much support as well when you were discovering yourself.
Absolutely.
In the artistic side of.
Yeah. Like even though it was like a world where I think like my parents were just, they had no idea about, like, it's not like I had a lot of family who were in the arts. It was something totally scary and different for them. But there was still like so much support and so much like kind of, okay, let's just see what she's going to do. So I think it must have been terrifying, yeah, for them.
So now we're going to leave this pillar, because this pillar here, we're talking about foundation. We're talking about like paternal history, you know, and then that support that you had, your education background. So let's move on now to another pillar where we'll talk about the women who came before you.
Yeah.
So we'll switch now to the maternal side of your family. And you mentioned earlier that your mummy used to call you out. You know, usually mums would call like your full name, but in your case, she would call you
by... Yeah, she gave me a nickname, yes. Yeah.
She called you by that adorable nickname. What was life like from your mother's side? Like, what was her background like?
So her background is, I think she grew up in Jalan Imbi. And this one is a bit more like hazy because like my paternal side, there's like books written and stuff, so I can like research it. But this one is really, really more like what you've heard from aunts and uncles and grandparents. But yeah, but they predominantly grew up in Jalan Imbi, and she had a large family. She had many siblings. And she was also, I think she was the second child. So, but she has like, there's five of them in the family. So there's a lot. And we're actually like, I see them a lot more because they're based in, most of them are based in KL. Yeah.
So just to give our listeners some perspective on Jalan Imbi. Jalan Imbi is kind of like in the heart of Kuala Lumpur near the Bukit Bintang district. It's long, sort of maybe 30, 40 years ago, that would have been... how would you describe Jalan Imbi?
At the time, you know, 30, 40 years ago, it was a Chinese area. So there was a lot of Chinese food. Yeah, Imbi Pudu, yeah.
That's right, yes. Even all the printing shops, all the print shops.
Yes, it's still there.
Yeah. Industry, right? There's a lot of like small shops, industry, factories as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you remember mum's... mom or mom's grandmother?
Yeah, I remember my grandma and my granddad as well. But like my grandma, I think she only passed away like about like four or five years ago. So it's not that.
Sorry
not
to that hear that.
Ago. Yeah, it's okay. It was time for her, but yeah. But she was a character for sure.
Yeah. So what's mom's surname if you don't? What's mom's name?
Yeah, it's Leong.
Leong. That would be Cantonese also?
Yes, Leong. Yeah, Cantonese on that side.
So you're really full-blown Cantonese, man.
Yeah.
And mum's mum? What was
so that's
her
my
name?
Grandma?
Mm-hmm. Your grandma?
Wong.
Wong.
Yeah, Wong Kuk
Fong.
So, yeah.
Madam Wong. What was her name, sorry?
Wong Kuk Fong.
Wong Kuk Fong. I mean, nobody would ever call her name out, right?
No, it's just Popo.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, Popo. Yeah. Do you remember her mom?
No. I mean, she doesn't, my grandma doesn't even know what exact day she's born. Like, it's, you know, from that time when they were moving from China to Malaya, and the paperwork was like guesswork, to be honest, at that time. So yeah, we didn't know.
So what? This part of the podcast is where we kind of sort of just imagine these women, they would have been like maybe in their 20s or something, and they're coming out to Malaya
yeah.
from China, and they would probably be boarding some kind of ship, not a cruise ship, but some kind of ship.
Yeah, like a harsh, very harsh journey, yeah.
I always think about that moment, like as they are boarding the ship, and it's like how
saying
many
saying bye to everyone you knew, and your life is that's yeah. it. Never seeing them again, basically. Yeah,
and it's like you're then sailing, you know, to God knows where.
Yeah,
for weeks on end,
new lands that you don't even know what it actually looks
so
like.
So brave.
What people said, yeah. nuts, but also like very adventurous if you're
very adventurous. I think there's always studies that's been done that we are also very much personifications of our grandmothers. A lot of what they suffer or what they enjoy is personified in the granddaughters. It goes down that line scientifically, apparently. I can't quote the study, but do you see any traits from your grandma to you?
I don't know. I mean, the strange thing is, so I was mentioning this earlier to you, but like my next film and how I'm writing it is, and this is from my paternal grandmother, though, like from my dad's mother. Like somehow the way I'm writing it is I really feel her inside my body. And that was really the spark of like what I wanted to talk about and really the beginning of my next feature film. But I feel her inside me. And I've only met her once when I was a little baby, when I was like 1 or like barely 2, I think, years old. And she was living in the UK. So she's British. And she was living in the UK at the time. And I remember my parents brought me to the UK to see her before she passed away. So I didn't know her at all. And that's my mama, like it's my British.
So you call her mama. And yeah. what was her name?
Gertrude Edith Lane.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lane.
Yeah, L-A-N-E.
Do you think she could have had, I mean, she's English or she's...
She's English, yeah.
Wow.
English with Scottish, I think, yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. Very interesting. I can't wait to watch that movie.
Yeah, I know. I'm supposed to have a quiet year so that I can like actually write it. So yeah.
Well, maybe while we're talking about that, let's just go with that flow into the writing process, right? I see a lot of bits behind you.
Yeah, books, DVDs, also puzzles, which are my like de-stress.
Oh, by the way, on that thought, DVDs, right? Have you seen that latest film with? Sorry, mind blank. It's on Netflix. It's called All About Me. No, funded by Bill Gates Foundation. Funded by Obama and Michelle and Obama Foundation. It's got Pretty Woman. What's her name?
Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts.
Yeah, something about. Yeah, I haven't seen it, but yeah, I know of it.
I love that. Some people say it was a bomb, but I love that film because I laughed so hard at the end. No spoilers, but the DVDs are a giveaway.
Okay.
But yeah, do you keep DVDs? Like, do you actually keep them?
Yeah.
So all your favorite ones, you store them?
I keep everything. I'm a hoarder. I like throwing things away. Yeah.
Okay. What's the process of screenwriting for you?
Oh my god, it's like painful and enjoyable and painful. I say painful twice. No, it's difficult. I like it. I love like that, you know, you're literally creating these worlds, and then you when it's good, you fall in love with the world, you fall in love with the characters, and those are the good times. But then it can get really bad where you don't know what's happening and how is everything not working out. So it's like a mix between like puzzle solving and also emotional and also being as honest and true to your voice as much as possible. So it's this balance that is kind of tricky. And the thing is, because I write, I don't have a co-writer, or at least, you know, I haven't had that experience yet. So it's very, sometimes very lonely where you just sit. And also procrastination is like the hugest thing when it comes to writing. You just like, the fact that you have to sit down and like put words on a page is crazy. It's like one of the hardest things to do. It's like you'd rather clean your entire house than do that, which is such a weird like thing that humans have. So yeah, it's a weird process, but yeah, I'm ready to start again. Yeah.
This is throwing a really bizarre question while you're writing, right? I'm just curious because in most of these podcasts, I always ask about food.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Chinese people, when they introduce each other, or even Southeast Asians, actually.
Yeah, we always ask, have you eaten?
Have you
That's
eaten,
how we
right?
say hi.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so bizarre. I mean, which other culture does that? But
it's an amazing culture. I love that. Yeah, so, food is so important.
Food is so important. But I think, and I was thinking about this a lot, I think it's because our forefathers ran away in search of greener pastures because there was no food. And I remember my grandma telling me, my grandma's still alive, she's 105, in just telling me how, like, she used to grow, like, sweet potato. Mm-hmm. And during the war days, World War II, this is, they were huddled up in the jungle and they would just cook sweet potato and rice.
Sweet potato was a huge deal during that time, yeah.
Right? And so when you're writing, when you're deep into all this, what is your go-to when it comes to food? Like, do you even think about it?
Oh, God, I don't think about it at all. It's all junk food. It's like Maggie Mee, like junk food or grab food, like... When I'm in the writing like time, it's just trash. But you know, it's nice to treat yourselves, and like I think like me and my partner, we love to have food explorations. We love to try like, you know, new places. So we'd always like plan around it, and like if we have a day free, then yeah, we will drive out and try things.
You would go look for food.
The balance of very. Like I love to be like, oh no, I eat very healthy when I'm like stressed, but no, I eat like horrible trash junk food. Yeah.
So now I understand why when you're traveling during these festivals, you're posting photos of nice food.
No,
I get it now.
I'm a good food person. Like it's like the thing that drives me. It's yeah, like one of the plus points of traveling so much. I don't care about seeing sights or monuments or whatever. I want to know, what do the people eat here? Like, what is the best dish that you guys can offer? So,
What's your ultimate go-to?
I mean, my favorite cuisines, I guess, would be Japanese, Korean, and Spanish. It always changes. We're always discussing this, but I think the top three is that.
And when you're fixing something simple for yourself, what do you eat?
Like very fast, like it would be like a quick salad or maybe some grilled fish or something like that.
Oh, that's very healthy.
Yeah, I told you I eat trash, so I need to like
balance it out,
balance it and be healthy. Yes.
Well, thanks for sharing that that bit. Let's see, what about, like, did grandma cook for you?
So my maternal grandmother, yeah, she would only cook, like, we'd see her cooking on Chinese New Year, so with the family gathering, and that would be like a huge stress, and she would be cooking like from morning and from the day before and everything, so that's the only time we see her cooking. Yeah,
actually it's amazing the amount of dishes that they can whip up.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, and sometimes it's only one person doing it because she refuses any help, because she thinks the help, you know, if you help, you're going to destroy her flow, which I get, actually. I totally get, because like I love cooking as well, and sometimes there is a flow that you're like, no, you're making it worse.
Right? Yeah. Because it's concoctions, right? You're putting ingredients together, and you really don't want somebody else to come and mess your cooking mojo.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, now we go back to cooking this film. How far in are you with this new film?
Oh my God, like not in, like very, very early days. Like okay. I haven't even like written like a proper treatment, but like it's just like a lot of things bubbling inside me. And I think I started by doing a lot of research because it's a period film, so it's set during 1930s Malaya, right before World War II, which is why I wanted to kind of have that basic knowledge of like that era first before I start like inputting all sorts of crazy shit into it.
Speaking about that era, there is a book that I want to read. It's Tan Thuan Eng's The Red Door, I think. I think it's set around that era.
Yeah, I haven't. But he always does stuff around that.
Yeah. I was watching The Garden of Evening Mists,
right,
as well. So that was... It's really actually interesting how that era is captured, because the 1930s, like in when you hear about 1930s in the Western world,
yeah,
1930s, 1920s, right? It was really a lot of fun. It was all the speakeasies in America. Yeah. And in Malaya, it was also really fun.
Yeah. No, it was crazy. It was wild. It was like, and even more exciting, it was so multicultural, the wild places, let's say. Not the ones that, I'm talking about the underground places. I'm talking about the places where white people were scared to go into. But like those areas were crazy. And yeah, the nightlife, the kind of creativity that was in there, the kind of speech, the kind of discussions that people were having were very, very kind of exciting at that time.
Actually, I can't remember. Sorry, history escapes me right now. But that Sun Yat-sen time, because you know, in Penang there's a Sun Yat-sen house, and I think it, if I'm not mistaken, it was around that time as well. But maybe more towards the '20s.
I think a little bit earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was all this thing happening. There was like Somerset Maugham coming, and then there's this Sun Yat-sen coming, right? And then there's the Cheong Fat Si mansion, that Cheong Fat Si guy in the region. And so much was happening. I mean, Penang, Ipoh, Malacca, the Straits of Malacca. It was just such an exciting place.
It's crazy. And then it all just kind of like explodes in World War II, basically, like a lot of places. But I think it was like, I love that time was like a kind of bottleneck of like this, like a lot of discussions of views about, you know, politics, but also, you know, it was so much color in like in the arts, in performances, in like underground places, and also so much color in like multiculturalism and the lack of it, or the too much of it, or the control of it. Yeah, like undercover agents coming in, scouting areas. It's so like exciting. Yeah.
I'm really curious what you watched when you were in boarding school, and were you even allowed to watch TV?
Oh yeah, okay, yeah, I can answer that. So when I was in boarding school, of course, it's like very strict. There's a lot of rules. You had to kind of like there were certain hours where you're allowed to watch TV, and especially like, you know, the major soaps you're allowed to watch. But then, like, of course, I was the naughty kid, and I remember when I was really young, I was really into South Park as well, and like when South Park was first starting. And so like I remember like organizing with all the girls in my house to have this like very organized mass movement from our dorms to the TV room, because the TV room was always locked, but there's a fire escape that we could climb up through the ladder. And like we would like climb up through the ladder, like everyone one by one, like in twos, and like quietly do it, tiptoeing around. And then we'd watch like these midnight films that were on TV. And I was obsessed with these midnight films, films that, you know, we definitely were too young to watch. I remember even being the kid, like going to my friend's houses and making her record like Texas Chainsaw Massacre at 1 a.m. And then getting caught for it, because the parents are like, you can't watch this. You're like 13 years old or whatever. I'm like, why not? I want to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I don't watch like films where there's like blood and guts being thrown everywhere. So yeah, that was what I was really into. And I even remember like I had the job, I think in my sixth form, where everyone wanted this job, and it was the job to go to Blockbuster Video to rent out, you know, like two films or one film.
A video store where you actually rent video.
So that the whole house can watch it. And I just rented whatever I wanted. I got in so much trouble because I was renting stuff that like, you know, the rating was too high for these kids. And I was like, yeah, I think I lost that position very quickly because I was renting out like a lot of horror, a lot of very campy stuff. I remember I got in trouble for renting out Rocky Horror Picture Show. And I was like, what? It's a musical. It's fun. Like, and they were like, no, 11-year-olds can't watch it or whatever. I was like, bullshit. So yeah, I was doing that.
Thanks so much for sharing your bon vivant. I think that should be made into a film. Just that period of you. Another film, you know, or an animation cartoon. So they always say that it takes a village to make a film, right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
So before you go into reading this piece, maybe you can share a little bit about that village.
I don't know how to say. It started with me and my producer, Fu Fei Ling, who is the other half of Ghost Girl Pictures, just the two of us, and a long journey of 5 years where we are creating that village, whether it be, you know, the team that's based here, or even our international co-producers are also part of the big family. So it's as you grow, as you learn more, as you're on this journey, it's your creating that village. And I think, you know, we're starting again with the next film, but it's nice to already have, you know, family members who are, you know, willing to hear you out for your next journey. Yeah.
From another Malaysian living overseas, we can only see Malaysia through your optics. Thank you for bringing this kind of optics out to the world. It makes us feel really proud to say, I'm Malaysian and she's Malaysian. I think when a product like that comes out, it's because Malaysia's gone through so many bumps along the way, right? Internationally, what we are known for. So it's actually really nice to see great films coming up from Malaysia. So good luck and
good year for Malaysian cinema.
Yeah. Yeah. Just be yourself, man.
Exactly. That's the key.
Okay, we're going to wrap up now. And we're going to wrap up with you reading one of your most favorite anything.
Yeah.
So just sharing that with us. So let us know who the author is and the title, and then take it away.
Okay, so it's a poem. It's by Charles Bukowski, who is, you know, a very famous author who, you know, was also very crazy. But I discovered this poem and I found out that he's also a cat person. So I was like, oh, I can relate. So it's called My Cat. I know, they are limited, have different needs and concerns. But I watch and learn from them. I like the little they know, which is so much. They complain, but never worry. They walk with a surprising dignity. They sleep with a direct simplicity that humans just can't understand. Their eyes are more beautiful than our eyes, and they can sleep 20 hours a day without hesitation or remorse. When I am feeling low, all I have to do is watch my cats, and my courage returns. I study these creatures. They are my teachers.
Really appreciate it. I hope I'll do you lots of justice with this one. And
thank you so much.
Thank you. So the plan is to record 99 women.
Amazing. Good luck with that. All right. Thank
you. Take care. Bye.